ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
This conversation we were talking about, you know, I don't know if you know, we ran the ball there and they didn't call a timeout. So we thought they were thinking the same thing. And then we popped the run in there and gave us a chance to kick the field goal to win it. So we're certainly talking about it.
That is Raiders head coach Rich Bisaccia admitting to America that he really was thinking exactly what America was. Maybe a tie would be the best way to end this thing after all. But what we got instead was an all-time finale to this regular season where the Raiders won, the Chargers got knocked out of the postseason entirely, and we finally got clarity about the NFL's insane playoff picture. So today, our Monday morning quarterback, Alex Smith, walks us through what he saw that we didn't. And then our friend Dave Fleming takes us to Indy for the college football championship. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, January 10th. This is ESPN Daily. Alex Smith, it is now Monday. It's 12:43 a.m. Eastern, East Coast time. You were at what I was thinking might be the game of the year, this Niners-Rams game. And then that got unseated around, I don't know, like the fourth quarter of, I mean, what the hell are we calling this Raiders-Chargers game, man? What was this?
You know, for me, it was like the perfect culmination to this insanely crazy, bizarre year. That's been, I say that in the most positive way because it has been, it's been fantastic as a viewer and a fan. But this Sunday night game, I don't remember seeing a game like this with the kind of implications and what was on the line. For me to sit and think that a Hall of Famer potentially was going to have his career ended at home, you know, by this standoff at the 50-yard line in overtime. Like, there were so many things going on. But yeah, it was yes. wild Sunday night.
Yeah, it's funny how long it took me to remember. Oh, right, Ben Roethlisberger and the entire city of Pittsburgh, they are like living and dying with this thing. So let's set up the stakes here because it was so much. It was an onion with a million layers. But basically what happened is, and we'll get to all of these in depth, but the Colts lose to the Jaguars. We will touch that in a second here. But it sets up this scenario, if you are unfamiliar with it somehow by now, that, hey, if there's a tie in Sunday Night Football, the final game of Week 18, if there's a tie between the Chargers and the Raiders, both of those teams get to go to the postseason. And it turns out the Steelers would be the team that is left at home. And Brandon Staley, the head coach of the Chargers, before this game said, no, we're not doing this. That's just coffee shop talk, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Never going to do it. And then we have a game in which it seems like, well, that's not even going to matter because the Raiders go up big. But the Chargers, Alex, and I'll start here and we'll sort of move chronologically from here. But the Chargers get this chance to tie the game down 7, down 2 minutes, with 2 minutes left. And they end up going on a 19-play, 83-yard drive that felt like it lasted a week. How would you unpack what that drive was like through your eyes?
The end of this game in overtime, if you're the Chargers, I mean, it was so crazy. At the one point, I think they were 11 or 12 plays in, And Al Michaels says this on the telecast, and I think they're at like the 50-yard line. And I was trying to figure out how it's mathematically possible to have run 12 plays and only be at the 50-yard line trying to march for this game-tying touchdown. And, I mean, as Justin Herbert kept converting 4th and 10 after 4th and 10 after 4th and 10.
It was unreal, dude.
And I couldn't possibly think he was going to do it one more time, and then he did it. And then to throw these just strikes, he was like he was unconscious out there. Game-tying strike.
His arm, like, it's like a rail gun. It's like, there's so little, like, arc, but it's just like 35-yard lasers. It was
lasers.
Absurd.
And we're leaving out the fact that he threw a 30-yard laser on a 4th and 21 when they were down 14 or 15,
Yes. Well, that's right.
Touchdown. And then marched him down on this one. And I want to say this all because honestly, I think it was the gutsiest performance I've seen all year in the entire NFL. And it was in a losing effort, and that's got a sting if you're Justin Herbert. But he threw the ball 65 times. He put the entire team on his back. His poor right tackle could not block Max Crosby. And Max Crosby, I felt like, was teeing off on Justin Herbert every single play. And I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback, you know, we all kind of have a hit meter. Like, as quarterbacks, when we're in the pocket, defenses know that if they get to us, even if they're not sacks, that hitting us repeatedly has an effect on our play. Our feet get sped up. Our decisions get made quicker. We make bad decisions. Like, just bad things happen if you hit quarterbacks. And you know, the tougher the quarterbacks, the longer they can resist that, the less they wear down. Like, I don't know. Justin Herbert's, I don't know where it is. This kid just stands in there and takes hit after hit and is unfazed by it. And again, in that drive, that 19-play drive when he marched them down to take this to overtime. Like, I mean, it was just so gutsy, again, standing in these big moments. And you said it, just throwing, like, just laser beams all over the field.
Herbert in the shotgun. Here is the season. They rush four. Here comes Max Crosby. Herbert to the end zone. Caught! Touchdown! Chargers!
It was really, really impressive, and it was an amazing game to watch and got us into this overtime where literally, like Brandon Staley said, it was coffee shop talk. I thought, like, you know, obviously it was fun to talk about, hey, what if they tied and they'd both get in? But then, I mean, the perfect scenario was drawn up. They were already in overtime. They'd been in this wild shootout, and they're staring at each other with a running clock and about 3 minutes left in overtime. And neither one of them really had the advantage and was going to take a timeout. And it honestly looked like it was going to happen. Like,
it took so long. I mean, we went through a whole, like, series of life cycles inside of this game alone, where we went from, I can't believe we didn't even come close to getting the overtime scenario, to, oh my God, we're getting it. Oh my God, we got it. And then I speak for America here, where we're pissed that we didn't get it. We went all the way around to, like, how did we not get it in the end? But just to reset the overtime here. So they get to overtime, Alex. And again, the playoffs are on the table if they want to just, like, kneel it out or something, right? Just kill the clock. However subtly or unsubtly you want to do it, that's what's available for you both, Rich Bisaccia, the head coach of the Raiders, and Brandon Staley, head coach of the Chargers, if you just want it. And what happens is the Raiders kick a field goal to start overtime, and then Justin Herbert continues to do the thing where he's, like, throwing a bomb for 47 yards to Mike Williams in the middle of the field, and they get a field goal, and here it gets to be even more, like, it gets even more infuriating and chaotic and absurd, right? Because now it's like, okay, it's the clock's about to go. Like, what do we do here? And did you ever think the Raiders were seriously considering actually just letting the clock run out?
To be 100% honest, I think they were totally content to let this clock run out. They had gone run. They knew that they were in the playoffs. Like, if the clock runs out, they're in, right? And they had the ball. They were at the 50-yard line. The clock is running. We're now under a minute. It is 3rd and 4, and the Raiders seem content to keep letting this clock run. And Brandon Staley, in a bizarre move, calls timeout with 38 seconds left. I really think at that point, the Raiders were fine with the overtime tie and both teams making the playoffs. Like, Who could fault them? They had played an absurd game against each other. It was absolutely amazing to watch. And somehow they ended up tied at midfield. And Brandon Staley calls this timeout. Raiders regroup, catch their breath. And Josh Jacobs, who was the star for the Raiders all night, rips off a 10-plus yard run to get them into the fringe of field goal territory. They let the clock run down to 2 seconds, call their last timeout, and now they've got – you know, they've got the chance to hit a game winner. If they miss it, they're in. If they make it, they're in. And Daniel Carson hit it, and Chargers are going home. And Ben Roethlisberger and the Steelers get to live to fight another day. I mean, I really thought we were going to be talking about this right now. My son, everybody in my household, Pablo, was somehow rooting for this. I didn't even understand it. Probably like the rest of the country.
Because you want to see the absurd, the perversely historical. That's where we got at the end here. It's just like, I'm sorry, Pittsburgh. I'm sorry, Big Ben. I don't give a shit about you. I just want to see something that it seems like America was, like, wishing into existence, like clapping for Tinkerbell. Yep. It kind of felt like that at the end. But hold on, because the Brandon Staley timeout thing was It's now going to be this like almost JFK style Zapruder film breakdown, because everybody has theories now. And Derek Carr, after the game, to be fair to what he said that the timeout absolutely changed the strategy of what they were going to call, but they were also never going to play for the tie. And of course, within those two statements is also a world of possibility.
And listen, every guy out there is going to say they're not playing for the tie. But clearly, where they were, you know, at midfield, and again, third and four and clock running, there was no real incentive to necessarily even play for the win. Like, you already had it. You're in the playoffs.
Right.
And then when he called timeout, I do think they got a chance for the to gather themselves. Like you said, they changed their play call. Obviously, they ripping off the whatever it was 12-yard run changed the game. But I still think
that was the thing where it was like, sure, okay, now we have to kick this thing and make it. Yeah,
I'm not sure if the clock had been running that entire time, even if they could have got it done, even with the big run. I mean, I still think potentially the clock's running out. It would have been close. It certainly would have been interesting. I mean, it was a scenario I couldn't have dreamed up in my wildest dreams. It was something. It was an amazing finale to an awesome NFL season thus far.
Well, before we get to the break here, I mean, it is unbelievable, truly, that the Indianapolis Colts lost to a Jacksonville Jaguars team whose fan base came to that game dressed as clowns. And that's not a figure of speech. It was a clown out, Alex. Another thing I had never seen, because they wanted to get Trent Baalke, the GM of the team, also out of the organization alongside Urban Meyer, the head coach, who obviously has already been fired. But the clown out was the stage for the Colts to lose to the worst team in the NFL that they were favored to beat by 14, by the way, for the record.
Yep. And still, I mean, a lot of our colleagues at ESPN and pundits all over the country were still on the Colts as the dark horse in the AFC to make a run, for all the reasons you just said, that the AFC is wide open, and that the Colts in the middle of this season won 7 out of 8 games and beat 4 playoff teams. They beat the Bills, the 49ers, the Pats, and the Cards, and looked like they had figured it out, and lost last week to the Raiders, who we saw obviously pull off the stunner tonight. And then, I mean, we talked about this emailing back and forth prepping for this week. I didn't even think we really needed to watch this game, because I thought the Colts were going to walk away with it. Little did I know.
Same.
I mean, and yeah, like you said, the first domino to fall that really kind of set all this off in the AFC. But I think, again, it speaks to the parity of the NFL that the Jags, in the division, there are no gimmies, and good for them. I mean, I'm obviously bummed for the Colts. I know they had a lot going on, but they couldn't get it done. You know, they to have to win one of the last two games to seal it, a division game, and certainly didn't come to play today. And a team that was already, I think, guaranteed the number one pick, certainly lost their coach and been through a ton of turmoil, showed up in week 18 and came to play while much of their fan base was dressed as clowns, like you said, and
taking their clown wings off at the national anthem and everything, man. Yep. Yeah.
All and good for happened. Them. Yeah. You know, I'm sure that was a long year for all those guys in that locker room, and especially Trevor Lawrence, and for him to go play well today, into the offseason.
Real good, didn't he?
Yeah. With a little bit of momentum, that means a lot. You know, I know it's only one game, but that does make a big difference when you're a young player and headed into a long offseason. We're going to hear a lot of talk about you, and I think to kind of take that with you, good for him. So,
yeah, look, the Colts, by the way, insult to injury here, they still send their first round pick in April to the Philadelphia Eagles as part of the Carson Wentz trade. And the Eagles, of course, are in the playoffs. We'll get to the NFC in a second here. And meanwhile, another sentence I didn't think we would say: the Jaguars and the Raiders feel great right now. Did not see us saying that, Alex Smith, at the end of the 2021-22 NFL season.
No doubt. Been a wild year. And again, just so I feel like when we got something figured out, you know, obviously the NFL throws us for a loop. So,
yeah. So I want to go to the loop that you saw in person in LA earlier today after the break. The
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
All right, Alex. So you were at SoFi Stadium in person, live, watching the Niners and the Rams. This was the game we all had circled. We knew this game would be consequential. Did not realize it would be this good, this dramatic, and I did not realize it would sound like this. What was it like to be there in that building?
Like you just said, I wanted to go to this game for a ton of different reasons. One, for purely just to go check out this new SoFi Stadium. It did not disappoint. It was absolutely amazing trip to go down there and see this game. First off, the stadium was awesome. I know it's going to obviously be the Super Bowl site, and it is truly the coolest thing I've ever seen. And then the game, you know, for me, when I played the Rams, you know, I played for the Niners for 8 years. And when I played the Rams, yeah, I had to go to St. Louis. And there really wasn't a great rivalry, you know, like going almost like all the way across the country. Yeah, they were a division opponent, but it didn't have like this great feel. And now with them coming to LA, you know, there's a lot of history between Northern and Southern California, even in these fan bases, even because it's the same fan base in baseball. It's the San Francisco Giants and it's the Los Angeles Dodgers, and they do not like each other. And they just had an amazing rivalry this past year. And it really has taken a life of its own with the Rams and the 49ers. And so lately, the Niners have had their number. And they just thrashed them on Monday Night Football earlier this year, really kind of took it to them. And there'd been a lot of talk this week leading up to this game, and the Niner fans showed up. I think SoFi Stadium had to be at least, it was over half red.
Dude, it was, I would have been embarrassed to be a Rams fan. Like that, the nationally, it felt like a home game for your former San Francisco 49ers.
I mean, I couldn't believe the entire second half, Matthew Stafford and the Rams went silent cadence in at a home game. I did not see that coming. The 49er faithful definitely traveled well, and it had a ton of energy. The Rams jumped on them early. You could tell this was a heated rivalry. These teams do not like each other. Obviously, the Rams playing for the division title and potentially the two seed. And it looked like it wasn't even going to be a game. Literally with 38 seconds left in the half, the Niners had 27 yards of offense and were losing 17-0. They had 27 yards of offense and losing 17-0. And this entire game flipped. They got the ball on their own 15 with 38 seconds left right before half and were able, Jimmy was able to take them down, and they got a field goal before half, and they got the ball to start the second half and took a 75-yard drive down and scored. And before you knew it, the Rams went back onto the field. It went from 17-0 to 17-10, and they were right back in this game, and in large part to this guy they got named Debo Samuel, who is like, dude, Mr. Do-It-All. He is so much fun to watch in person and on TV, but this guy is electric. And he really single-handedly, I felt like, got this team back in the game.
Well, let's start with the third quarter. And I want to start, actually, we'll get to Debo right after I ask you about Jimmy just head on, because there was this conversation, right, about Trey Lance, how good he looked last week playing the Texans, admittedly, but looking great, looking like the future. And then Jimmy with his injured thumb, right, has a ligament, bone, all sorts of a mess in his throwing thumb. He says it's really painful. He looks like, you know, not the right choice in that first half. But then what do you see from him in that third quarter and then on out of Jimmy Garoppolo? How do you grade him in that second half?
I thought Jimmy played really, really well today. I thought he played great, other than the two interceptions, which were bad interceptions. But the thing that Jimmy has, Jimmy has not lost to the Rams. I think he's undefeated as well against the Rams. And I think part of it is the strength of the Rams is their D-line. And they get a ton of pressure, especially in passing situations, a ton of penetration, and especially up the middle. Aaron Donald is one of the best interior D-linemen, the best interior D-linemen in football. And oftentimes you get guards and centers literally in your lap. Well, Jimmy has this amazing ability that he can kind of throw from his own platform. Like, he doesn't have to step into a throw. He can kind of throw off his back leg. He has a very quick release. And he can do this. He can really throw from uncomfortable situations, situations that a lot of quarterbacks, myself included, wouldn't even dare to throw because there's a guy in front of us. Well, Jimmy does this a lot, and he made some amazing throws under pressure today. Well, I feel like it's something that you almost maybe have to do to beat the Rams. But on both interceptions today, he did. He tried to do it. He tries to make these throws under duress that you look at him sometimes on the interceptions and you're like, what was he thinking? But then at the same time, you watch some of the amazing throws he makes under duress, and he literally has this innate ability to kind of stand in there and with the pocket collapsing, and he can still put the ball in some tight windows. And he made the plays when it mattered most. I'll say this, especially down the line, you know, at the end of regulation and in overtime.
Oh, those drives. Yeah, man.
He was ridiculous. I think he finished like 8 of 11 for like 150 yards and a touchdown. He was really, really good when it mattered most.
It was one of those things where oh, wait, it's fourth down and now you're your best version of yourself, which was a stunning thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's amazing for Jimmy because I think that's really been the knock for him here with the Niners is a little bit he's good, but has he been the guy that in clutch moments can really win the game for you? And I think that's what people question, especially coming off, obviously, the couple years ago with the Super Bowl loss, like, and they had the lead. Is he a guy that can do that? And it was nice to see him make the plays today in the big moments when his team needed him, and he did it. And obviously, yeah, like I said, it's nice to be throwing and handing off to Debo as well. So, but yeah, it was awesome. Awesome game. Happy for Jimmy. I thought he looked himself. I couldn't see anything from his thumb. I know it's got to hurt.
Yeah, wait. So the Debo experiment, which has clearly been a success beyond imagination. Like, how do you scheme against a receiver, Alex, who is also a running back, who also today adds another limb to the equation? Because he goes and throws for the first touchdown for the Niners of the game.
Jeff Wilson Jr., Ayuk left. Now Wilson goes in motion. It's a pivot handoff to Debo. Looks to throw. He will throw wide open. Touchdown! San Francisco!
It's funny. I mean, I didn't know what to make of Debo. You know, as he got into the league, is he this kind of this gadget guy? He's a return man. Yeah, you can hand him reverses and end arounds and, you know, try to throw him a screen here or there. And I think there were a lot of questions of whether or not he could, what was he going to become? You know, like, where is there a future there for a guy like that? And really have to give him a lot of credit and the Niners a lot of credit, Kyle Shanahan and all those offensive coaches. But Debo, like, did he really, he can be both. Yeah, he can be a receiver that's gone for 1,400 yards this year and 6 touchdowns, but he can also be a guy that you line up in running back. I think he's averaging 6 yards a carry and has 8 rushing touchdowns. Oh, and then today, yeah, we'll put in the halfback pass for him and he'll throw one for us. I mean, I think the thing that I saw today in person that really came off is how much this entire team, especially on offense, feeds off his energy. I mean, he is really, really electric. He plays, obviously, he's an incredibly gifted athlete, but he plays with such determination and he runs with so much attitude that I really do think it's contagious for this entire team. And I think he's a huge reason they are where they are. And it was fun to see him kind of will his team back into this in the third quarter.
Yeah, so that's 8 rushing touchdowns on the season for Debo Samuel. That is more than anyone else has ever had at wide receiver in the Super Bowl era. But I want to also ask you about the defense of the 49ers, because that feels like as big a key to why that second half was so dominant for San Francisco as anything, right? I mean, the pressure they got on Matt Stafford, that was ridiculous at times.
Well, it was, and they were playing at a really high level, and that led to, I think, the reason for another questionable call. You know, the Rams had the ball with the lead with a minute 40 and 3rd and 7 on their own 43 and elected to run it. I couldn't believe it. You know, it was a scenario, essentially a scenario. It's 3rd and 7. If you convert, the game's over. And you've got Matthew Stafford, you've got Cooper Kupp, you got OBJ, you've got Higbee at tight end. Like, they have a ton of weapons.
Yes.
They couldn't stop Cooper Kupp the drive before on third down. Like, this is the reason you went and got Matthew Stafford. You have a chance here to end the game on 3rd and 7. And they elected to they gotten like three tight ends and handed the ball off under center and made the Niners take their last time out. They didn't even have a chance really at converting, ended up punting, and Jimmy, you know, ends up tying the game and obviously winning an OT. I thought all of that that led to that kind of funny, in my mind, I really thought it, I couldn't understand it. I didn't understand how Sean was making that call, but I think it was in large part because of this Niners D line that they were causing problems the entire game. And I don't think he wanted to risk dropping back in that situation with that D line led by Nick Bosa. But Armstead played really well today as well. And yeah, they were causing problems and ended up making the walk-off winning play. This defense, and especially this secondary that has let them down all year. I mean, I can't remember how many times we talked about him. I think back to that Colts rain game when Wentz was just chucking up passes and getting PI after PI, and felt like the Rams tried to do that in overtime, and they were there to make the play with the walk-off winning interception. So good for them in that regard.
Yeah, so the Niners walk away victorious 27-24. And just as a former Niner, Alex, somebody who clearly got to witness the rivalry in bloom now, I believe 5-0 in their last five against the Rams. Like, is this just a matchup thing that the Rams are just a bad matchup for the Niners? Like, what? Why is it this way? Why is it this way beyond the divisional sort of hatred here?
Oh, I think there's a lot of levels to it, Pablo. I think you got to start with the fact that these two head coaches are really, really close friends and coached together for a long time. I mean, these guys learned offense together. They learned football together for a long time. I mean, these guys are good buddies running almost identical versions of the same offense. They have a lot of the same philosophies. And here they are now running their own teams, you know, and both pretty successfully doing so. And I think when they play each other, I think there's a lot on the line, even to that level. I know they are obviously extremely competitive, and I think there's a lot going on in that chess match. Certainly, I think Kyle obviously has had the upper hand at this point in the head-to-head battle. But it's fun to watch. It's intense, and again, I go back to the proximity. It's been amazing with them, obviously, in LA. And I think, like I said, there's a lot going on between the Bay Area and the LA sports fans, and I think this only adds to it and makes it even better.
Yeah. Did you find yourself, you know, rooting for your former team, the team that drafted you? Did you feel that as a retired guy of the game, getting to do some of that?
I did. Absolutely. I love what they got going on. I kind of love their personality that they play with. You know, I think they've got something good going. I think they've kind of figured out their formula. And then, you know, as you know, you're heavily influenced by your kids, Pablo, and my kids have quickly become indoctrinated since being back here in the Bay Area, and all of a sudden they're Niners fans. So I really felt like, it was fun. It was fun to see them go down there and get the win. It was a great game on top of it, but definitely feel myself, pulling for the old team.
So Alex, at the end of your first regular season as one of us, a regular season that did not seem to want to end, incidentally, how are you feeling? Are you ready for the postseason?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have mixed emotions. You know, I really feel like from my prognostication skills have really been lacking this year. I feel like every time I feel like I got a beat on a team or division, a scenario, I'm immediately proven wrong. So definitely left wanting there, but this has been an amazing year. Going in, I'm excited for this extra game. We get an extra wild card game on each side. And so definitely looking forward to it.
Yeah. The one lesson I have for you is no one ever remembers the predictions you got wrong. But if you happen to hit one of them, Alex, screenshot that.
That's
put it
right
on Instagram. You'll dine out on that like a true media member, no matter what your actual statistical record might be.
Note taken. Done.
Alex Smith, I'll see you in the playoffs, man.
Pablo, thanks as always, man.
All right, up next, we check in with a veteran journalist, Dave Fleming, and a very special guest of his, because they're in Indy to preview the college football championship tonight.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Dave Fleming, I usually think of you as like our magic school bus driver on ESPN Daily. You're taking us on voyages into the human body a lot of the time, but tonight, you're almost a more literal magic school bus driver because you've driven from your home in Charlotte. You're in Indianapolis where the college football championship is taking place tonight, Monday night, and you have a special correspondent with you. Who is it?
Really, I'd refer to her less as a correspondent and more as my boss. I am with my daughter, my oldest daughter, Allie, who is a junior at the University of Georgia and who has this season taught me how to be a football fan, I think.
Wow. Okay, hold on. So, Allie, I mean, that's a big claim your dad just made about what you've done for him so far.
Yeah, that's a huge claim. And you know what? I would say I have made you a football fan again. You know, Dave went to Miami of Ohio, and I can't say I've heard anything about the football scene there ever. So for him to, you know, live through me in UGA, it's been great.
I can already tell you called your dad Dave. I can't relate to that at all, but this is a dynamic that I'm already very into. So, okay. So this is all very personal because you guys are also co-hosts of your own podcast. It's called In Time Out. And Allie, yes, you are a Georgia Bulldog. So just what is your psychology here at this moment? Like, how are you feeling before, you know, playing Alabama?
You know, honestly, I'm a little nervous. I'm not going to lie. The last time we played them, you know, we didn't come out on top like I had hoped. But I also feel like we're coming into this as like the underdogs, the under Bulldogs. So I feel like we have some luck on our side maybe, and that this is our redemption.
Flem, I mean, Dave, Dad, I don't know what to call you now at this point, but it's strange because, yes, Allie very diplomatically put it about her Bulldogs that it didn't go the way they hoped. They got blown out 41-24, right? And now, actually, Vegas has Georgia as a slight favorite in this game, actually, so they're under and overdog at the same time. How are you feeling about this in regard to, you know, managing your daughter's expectations here?
Well, I'm not trying to manage her expectations at all because the fun of this is just sort of like throwing logic to the wind and actually being a fan and just going, you know what? Since the Flemings are going to be in the house, we're definitely winning. So, and let's make plans for next year's championship game too. I love being a fan. I never gotten to do this and I love it. And Allie's nice enough to let me tag along.
So obviously, like, the rules usually for people in your job, Dave, are like, you know, no cheering in the press box. What is the approach for this game, though? How are you guys approaching that? Because it seems like that rule is distinctly something you're refusing now.
Yes. Well, the biggest thing is we both got our outfits, our game day outfits. Apparently, that's a big thing. And Allie said, just get us close enough to the field that we can run on the field afterwards and celebrate with the team. So that's what we're doing.
Wait a minute. Allie, your dad mentioned outfits. What are the outfits?
Okay, so I don't know if this is just like an SEC game day thing, but outfits are a huge part of the vibe, you know, and the luck that we're bringing to the team. So it took us a while to figure them out. But Dave's bringing a shirt that he's worn to a game where we won, you know, something that has some luck to it. So we win.
Well, Allie's not telling you. She was in a major panic after I said I had secured tickets because I was like, what's the matter? And she's like, I don't have an outfit. So Allie, as I didn't even know you could do this, Pablo, she went on Rent the Runway, and now she's going to be sporting it's like a red, Georgia red fur coat, kind of?
It is.
Wow.
Yeah. Going all out.
Yeah. Chef's kiss.
Wait, so hold on. So Rent the Runway, right, the website where you can rent like fancy formal wear. My wife also is a customer of that website, incidentally. I assume, Flem, that you went and found like a red tux then in response, or what's your getup?
You're showing me up in front of my daughter, Pablo. I mean, because that's a great idea. I should have went with the full. You're absolutely. Is it too late to rent something?
You know what? You could probably get it tomorrow.
Okay.
We should go on and check.
Yeah. I went. I was lucky enough to get clearance to wear. It's like a super ugly Georgia Hawaiian shirt. And Allie was like, okay, all right. You can wear it, but just don't stand too close to me.
Well, how did you get the tickets, Flem? Because did you use an ESPN connection? Who's your plug? Like, how did you pull this off?
I didn't. Honestly, I am getting the full fan experience, and it's not always pleasant. I just went on StubHub or whatever and bought the tickets, and I had them. I did. I had them in my little checkout cart, and I thought, is this really worth it? And I thought, Allie and I, we're going to be talking about this in 25 years. And I'm like, absolutely, it's worth it. So, yeah, I never imagined this. I think Allie was like, she loved the fact that it was an SEC school and there was going to be big time football. This has all been a bonus for me, because I just never imagined getting to share this with her or just getting to see sports from this perspective.
So something that you'll remember in 25 years is a pretty high bar, Dave. So I want to ask both of you guys, as you roll into tomorrow, give me like the game plan. Are there superstitions involved? Are you guys getting a big breakfast? How are you starting your day? How are you easing into this? Or are you just jumping right in?
You know, I think the first stop would be Starbucks. We got to get fueled up. We got to get ready. And then I'm probably going to put my outfit on at like 12. Like, we just got to start the day strong. And, you know, you'll put your fun polo on, and we'll just hopefully just have the luck all day, you know?
And, you know, I thought this was adorable when Allie was a freshman. They do this every year. Kirby Smart is the one who brings all the freshmen into the stadium and teaches them all the chants and cheers and things that they know what to do during a football game. So basically now it went from Kirby Smart to Allie, and then Allie's going to transfer that to me pregame, so I know when to bark and when not to bark.
Wait a minute. This is very important news that I did not know about. So Kirby Smart, of course, the head coach of the Georgia Bulldogs, by the way, a guy who is 0-4 against Nick Saban. That's the other context here. His boss.
Allie, we're out of here. Let's go.
But what you're saying, guys, is that there's an education that he has given Allie that I want to get a taste of here. Give us a cheer. Can you guys display some of what you've learned from Coach Smart?
Of course. It's pretty simple, you know. You know, you just start with the go. Dogs! Sick of.
That wasn't a bulldog. Come on.
You know, your bark is your personality. Mm-hmm. You gotta make your bark.
I want the listener to know that while all of that was happening, there were hand gestures, there was frantic waving. It was very, very impressive for the record. So that does raise the next question, which is, Allie, how likely is it that your dad is going to embarrass you tonight?
Oh, like 20 out of 10. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. You know, we were at one game and he barked at a group of just guys, probably, yeah, you know, fraternity guys. And they just did not bark back at him. And I was like, you know what? I don't think I will ever have a moment that I'm as embarrassed as I am right now. So he can do anything tomorrow. And I'll be like, you know what? I love you. Like, you're great. You're doing great.
You know that Tom Brady high five where no one high fived him back? It feels like that, except your whole family's watching. And I'm 100% going to embarrass Allie tomorrow.
I feel like, Allie, the silver lining there is that you are very familiar with that experience already.
Oh, yeah. I'm a little too familiar, so I'm expecting it.
We're 14 rows up. And once we win, my plan is to run onto the field and ask Kirby Smart to hold me like a baby.
Dave and Allie Fleming, thank you so much for barking at us on ESPN Daily.
Go Dogs!
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.